But first,
the election of Angus Taylor has seen the new opposition leader reward some of his key lieutenants in his ministry shake-up, as he aims to take the fight to the government of the day. This has seen the return of some of the conservative warriors such as Jacinta Nabijimba-Price, and the return of national members from exile after being suspended for breaching cabinet solidarity. According to Associate Professor Paul Williams, the reshuffle shows that the coalition is going to head in a more conservative direction.
Look, I think it's a pretty clear message. I don't think anyone's left in the dark about he's not going to be an equivocal opposition leader. We all know he's from the national right. We all know he's a capital C conservative, and he's put the capital C stamp on the shadow cabinet. No one really is surprised by that. We expected him to do that. He's sort of a crash through or crash type of politician, and that's the sort of opposition it will be.
According to the political editor of the Australian Financial Review, Phil Khoury, the Liberal Party was already lurching to the right policy-wise before the Angus Taylor announcements.
Yes, not a huge change of direction. If you look at where Susan Lee was trying to go, especially on the economy and immigration, she was headed in a similar direction. But I think it's the case of emphasis here that Taylor's making no bones about wanting to be hardline on immigration and return to a more liberal way of economic management that's helped them for so long. Now, Susan Lee made all those same points. She was about to release a fairly hardline immigration policy and had made a lot of statements about getting back to focusing on debt and deficit and trying to fix the economy. But it wasn't really cutting through for a number of reasons. One of them was she wasn't getting a lot of clean air from her own side, to be honest. So what Taylor has here is certainly the advantage of being the new guy. People are prepared to sit up and listen. You get a brief window after you become a new leader. People are interested in what you have to say. And in this instance, he's sort of probably articulating things a bit better and a bit more forcefully than Lee was able to. And that's really the key difference.
A big part of the Taylor reshuffle is built around the economic portfolios, and we've seen the elevation of Tim Wilson to Shadow Treasurer and Jane Hume. Wilson in particular is known for his effectiveness in framing Bill Shorten's mooted change to frank dividends as a retirement tax. Do you think that the new messengers might be able to more effectively take up the economic fight to the government?
Well, that's the intention. Back to Tim Wilson. Look, I thought Ted O'Brien was pretty good, but Wilson was sort of this fearless warrior. A bit like the Terminator, you just blow him up or drive the truck over him, and he gets up and he's coming at you again with those little red eyes. You know, you can't stop the guy. And so he has this relentlessness about him, which I think has earned him the job. And as you rightfully pointed out, as a backbencher back in 2019 when Labor went to that election, that the polls, everyone else suggested they should have won. One of the real reasons they came undone was because they just went a step too far with promising to revoke these cash refunds for excess franking credits, and it really scared all the retirees. Now, it was Wilson who prosecuted that case as a backbencher, set up a committee and an inquiry, and it really became, for Labor, a bit like Work Choices was for the Liberals back in 2007, and it's something they'll never touch again. He's got this reputation for being able to, you know, prosecute a case and be fairly hardline about it. And it'll be a really interesting matchup between him and Jim Chalmers. Chalmers is fairly aggressive himself, different sort of person. So, you know, I think it's the matchup everyone's going to be looking forward to when Parliament resumes.
Among the biggest losers in the reshuffle is Immigration Minister Senator Paul Scar. Mm. Now, Scar was a Lease supporter, but is his demotion a sign that Angus Taylor wants to adopt a more muscular approach when it comes to immigration?
Well, pretty much. At the end of the day, I think Ronald Reagan said you've got to dance with the one that brung you, and that means we always see this when a new leader comes in. They've got to reward the people who voted for them and help them get the leadership, and that always means the people who supported the other candidate, you know, the loser, have to make way, and Scar was one of those. He's a very thoughtful person, Paul. He's very smart. I thought his stuff in immigration was good. He wasn't a softie by any means. He had helped author this fairly hard-line policy that was going to be released, or elements of it at least, but what you've seen is this fellow called John O'Dunham, who is the Home Affairs spokesman. That is the senior portfolio. Immigration is in the junior ministry. And what's happened is Dunham now has immigration incorporated into Home Affairs. So he's cabinet-level right-winger who's going to oversee the whole thing. So, yes, it does give full control of immigration to the right.
What's interesting is Scar had worked really hard to rebuild ties with multicultural communities for the coalition, voicing his concern about, you know, the proposal of the migrant ban a few days ago. But in trying to win back estranged One Nation voters, is there a risk the coalition could lose support in diverse communities in urban electorates?
Oh, very much so. And this is the balancing act that Taylor must now perform. I thought the most telling line was in the press conference last Friday after they won the leadership, where Jane Hume said, we're going to take the Liberal Party forward, not to the left or not to the right. Susan Lee made the quite understandable thing that we need to go back to the centre to win back all these urban voters who have deserted us and so forth. That immediately puts you under attack from the right-wing Sky News crowd and everyone else. I think by Hume saying what she said, it means it gives them license to go to the left and to the right, in the cause of bringing the party forward. So there's going to be, as part of this balancing act, we're going to have to try and do both on different issues and explain it. But certainly the existential threat to the Liberal Party, the really serious threat is at the moment is much more One Nation. The Teal thing seems to have sort of plateaued a bit, but the way One Nation is gouging their vote, that's the priority.
Along a similar line, we've seen the return of Jacinta Navagina-Price, who on a podcast to Kyle Stefanovic said, "I'm back, baby." How do you see the appointment of Jacinta Price as Minister of Skills and Training?
Look, there's definitely a sense of entitlement there. It's not like Jacinta's actually done anything that warrants a front bench position. She's done no policy work. When Susan Lee had her on the front bench, she did no policy work and she just wanted to talk about immigration and other things instead. And then, you know, said those inflammatory remarks about Indian immigrants, which had her demoted from the front bench. I think both her and Andrew Hastie, who's also in the same camp, have both been rebirthed by Taylor. They've both been given fairly serious portfolios. They have to perform. They have to show they're capable. If they see themselves as leaders one day and so forth, they have to do more than just sit on social media and exist in an echo chamber appealing to all the sort of Trump supporters out there and talking about issues like immigration and so forth. They have to do some policy work now. They have to earn their spot. We'll wait and see whether they're capable of doing that and staying in their lane or whether they're going to go out and start freelancing on immigration and things like that again.
The removal of the first female Liberal Party leader has also led to concerns that the Liberal Party will continue to have a women problem, which has seen them finding it increasingly difficult to appeal to a demographic that is increasingly swung towards Labour and Progressive parties. Both Phil Khoury and Associate Professor Paul Williams suggest that if the Liberal Party is not able to improve its appeal to female voters, it could remain in the wilderness for quite a period of time. According to Associate Professor Paul Williams, this is providing the Labour Party with a structural advantage due to Labour having a more representative amount of women in its ranks in comparison to the Liberal Party.
The appointment of Jane Hume to the deputy leadership will do absolutely nothing. Having a few women in shadow cabinet will do absolutely nothing. The Liberal Party still has a major women problem, and there's a huge gender gap in Australian politics. But ironically, we've had a gender and class inversion in Australia. In the late 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, into the early 80s, women disproportionately supported the Liberals and men disproportionately voted Labour. Since John Howard, we've seen a reversal. You've got women who are supporting politics of the left, Labour and Greens. You've got men who are disproportionately voting Coalition and One Nation. We've also seen a class inversion. Blue-collar, poorly educated men would vote for the Labour Party. Now those people vote for the Coalition and One Nation. Tertiary-educated, white-collar women vote for the Labour and Green parties, not the Coalition and One Nation. So Australia has a complete inversion of class and gender in the last half century, and having a few women in shadow cabinet is not going to do that. And clearly, having a Liberal Party woman didn't do anything about it. Women stayed away. You know, when Peter Dutton, for example, talked about getting rid of the work from home policy, that, you know, that abandonment of that policy would have affected women disproportionately because they would have been combining professions with home childcare. That would have been a clear message to women that the Liberal Party doesn't get them. The Liberal Party needs to broaden its policy base. It needs to broaden its consultation base. It needs a complete policy overhaul, and this is the one that it'll take a long time for them to admit to, but the Liberal Party needs to adopt affirmative action. The Labor Party caucus in the House, more than 50% are women. Labor Party caucus in the Senate, more than 60% are women. That didn't happen by accident. There's nothing special about the Labor Party. They forced cultural change through rule change. The Liberal Party will not address its women problem at its root until they adopt affirmative action. The Liberal Party talks about merit, but merit itself, as we know, is a problematic term. Merit assumes that we're all coming from a level playing field. But, of course, upper-middle-class women whose first language is English is not the same as a working-class woman whose first language isn't English. Until the Liberal Party adopts affirmative action, even a modest target, like 33% of its winnable seats must be contested by women, women will not look favourably at the Liberal Party.
Associate Professor Paul Williams of Griffith University ending this report.